Let's turn now to our Nick Schifrin, who's in Munich for the annual security conference. Nick, so how did this news about Alexei Navalny land in Munich?
Amna, it was a real shockwave. That is the best way to describe this. I was with the congressmen and women and their staffs as this news came in, and it was really received with horror that quickly became grief, mixed with a lot of doubt about whether this was actually true. Many of them have worked with Navalny and his staff for many years, and many of them quickly started putting together statements that would blame Putin, that would blame the Kremlin, even though there's no official confirmation. It also instantly changed the conversation. As you know, Amna, a lot of the conversation coming into this conference was about former President Donald Trump and his comments about NATO. It was about the U.S. failure to be able to deliver from Congress absolutely vital military aid to Ukraine that it needs in the next few weeks. And instantly, the conversation became instead about Russia and Putin.
So Nick, as you say, much of that conversation focused on former President Trump and on Ukraine before the news out of Russia. But what about the conversation about former President Trump and NATO and Ukraine? Where was that today?
Yeah, still very, very much going through the halls of this international security conference. And perhaps it's no surprise that at an international security conference, most of the audience believes in international security cooperation. So perhaps Vice President Kamala Harris earlier today was playing to the crowd when she suggested former President Donald Trump, whose name she did not actually use, was the outlier for suggesting that the U.S. should not defend countries that do not meet that 2% GDP threshold of defense spending.
However, there are some in the United States who disagree. They suggest it is in the best interest of the American people to isolate ourselves from the world. Let me be clear. That worldview is dangerous, destabilizing, and indeed short-sighted.
One of the attendees here is Estonian Prime Minister Kaja Kallas. I asked her earlier tonight to first respond to the news about Alexei Navalny.
Putin's playbook hasn't changed. I mean, we have seen a long list of political competitors that he has eliminated. So this is not a surprise, considering that he has been torturing Navalny for years already. This is the way dictators work. I mean, in dictator's handbook, what do? You eliminate all the alternatives so that, you know, the cronies around you, when they see that you're going to the wrong direction, they have nowhere to turn to because there's no alternative.
Was Navalny murdered?
Well, I can't say that because we don't know. I mean, we don't see, but it's clearly that the intention of, you know, the poisoning that took place some time ago, the imprisonment and the way he was treated there, I mean, he was not treated well.
This week, the Estonian Foreign Intelligence Service released a new assessment that says Russia is preparing for a military confrontation with the West within the next decade. What is that based on, and can it be prevented?
It can be prevented if we invest in our defense, because if you think about the aggressor takes the step of attacking somebody when he thinks that he can win because the other side is weaker. So we haven't taken the defense seriously enough, and that means all the NATO allies have to do more.
We've been focusing on Europe, but I want to ask about the U.S. Is the United States a reliable partner?
Of course, all these statements from United States are making us worried because United States has been the biggest ally. And I mean, the only time Article 5 has been used is when US called us. So this is something that we need to do together. I mean, when you have aggression that pays off some part in the world, it will invite other aggressors in the world to start wars elsewhere.
Does Europe need to assume that the United States cannot defend Europe and cannot provide perhaps Europe in a nuclear umbrella anymore?
I don't think so. We have, you know, the agreements in place in NATO, all the structures in place. What we definitely have to do ourselves is to do more, like I said before. But, I mean, the United States has been a reliable partner, and, of course, we hope that it's going to be in the future as well.
You say we hope. Former President Trump, of course, has said twice now in the last week or so that perhaps the U.S. should not defend NATO allies that do not meet that 2% GDP threshold. Perhaps the U.S. Congress can restrain a future President Trump from leaving NATO, but isn't the damage already done? I mean, isn't the damage to Article 5, the doubt that is being sown here, that the U.S. wouldn't come to NATO's allies?
It has been a wake-up call for many European countries that haven't done enough. And I think that is a positive thing, if they start to do more. But of course, statements like this, we are watching them you know, trying to figure out, but this is not a surprise. I mean, presidential candidate Trump, when he was president, he had the same ideas. But what I want to say is that over 60% of American exports go to Europe, not to Asia, but to Europe. So it is actually to the benefit of your people, your jobs, your employment, your prosperity, that we are so, really tied to each other. So if something happens in Europe, that has a very clear effect on American economy.
The U.S. House of Representatives so far has not accepted sending more military aid to Ukraine. In eastern Ukraine, we're already seeing Avdiivka about to fall to Russia because of a shortage that already exists for Ukrainian weapons. And there's also worries that without this military aid, Ukraine will run short of air defense just in the next few months. Some I talked to are worried that Ukraine will lose the war if the U.S. House does not send that money. Do you share that concern?
Definitely, we have to help Ukraine, and we have to help them more. I mean, because they are defending their country. If you think about the countries in the Ramstein coalition that are supporting Ukraine militarily, so the combined defense budgets of the Ramstein coalition are 13 times bigger than that of Russia's heavily inflated one.
But without the U.S., doesn't that number change dramatically?
But actually, Europe has done more than U.S., but of course America has a very, very important share there. It is something that we have actually calculated. If all the Ramstein coalition countries would commit to 0.25% of their GDP in military aid to Ukraine, this breaking point for the war could be there.
But finally, you know, Ukraine has been sent more than $80 billion of military aid from the West. This past year, it did not achieve even its lowest goals for the counteroffensive. What can it achieve with more military aid, even if the House releases it, that it hasn't already?
If they have long-distance weapons, if they have real weapons to defend themselves, then they can push back Russia as well. So the breaking point in all these elements could be actually much nearer. But of course, we can't also say that let's just walk away and say that, okay, you get this territory and the aggression pays off. If aggression pays off, it serves as an invitation to use it elsewhere, and then we will wake up in much more dangerous world.
So how do you see this war ending?
I see this war ending with Russia going back to Russia. That is actually very, very simple and easy.
Prime Minister Kaya Kallas, thank you very much.
Thank you.